Welcome back to The Table Women, a podcast by and about women in the entertainment industry. I'm Sarah DeForest.
And I'm Victoria Banks.
It's season four, and we're excited to be back with a whole new group of inspiring creators and industry tastemakers. You know the drill. Pull up a chair and get nice and comfy, because everyone is welcome and everyone deserves a seat at
the table.
Do what you want, work what you got, say what you think, and don't let them stop you. Stop you, don't let them stop. Stop you, don't let them stop you.
Over the last few years, rising star Brooke Eden has become a critically acclaimed force to be reckoned with in Nashville. Heralded by Billboard as a fiery country star in the making and named one of CMT's Next Women of Country, as well as a Music Row Next Big Thing, Brooke has used her personal journey to self-acceptance to create music that is both bold and passionate, with the message that it's okay to be who you are. A dynamic performer, Brooke has shared the stage with Garth Brooks, Trisha Yearwood, Tim McGraw, Kane Brown, and Keith Urban. Both a CMT Music Awards and 2023 GLAAD Media Awards nominee for Outstanding Breakthrough Artist, Brooke has been lauded by a variety of publications, including American Songwriter, Billboard, BuzzFeed, The Gay Times, People, Vogue, Wide Open Country, and Young Hollywood, while performing on national television shows such as NBC's Today and the Academy of Country Music Awards. Gay Times magazine says Brooke Eden is the queer country superstar we need and deserve. Her new EP, Outlaw Love, tells the story of her relationship with wife Hillary and details her journey of self-acceptance and empowerment in a way that is purely Brooke, authentic, glowing, and honest. We are so pleased to welcome to the table Brooke Eden. Welcome back for everyone listening, sticking around with us. It has been a little bit of time slash a lot of time, but we are really excited to have Brooke Eden with us to open up our newest season. Brooke, thank you so much for joining us today.
I didn't know I was season opener. This is so exciting.
You're so fancy.
Yes. I feel fancy, y'all. This is awesome.
I think it's going to be a really beautiful conversation to open back up with, because you've come out with a lot of new stuff this past year. It has been a year of so much beautiful love and change in your life. And so for our listeners, whether or not they know you, can you give us just a little bit of a breakdown of how you got started in music and kind of the bullet points of how you got here?
Yeah. Well, I started singing when I was 4 years old. And I know that sounds silly. You're oh, cool, a four-year-old. But my dad is and was a drummer in a country band, a local country band in my hometown. And he recognized, oh, wait, she's staying on key. She loves this. This is so cool. And so I remember one day he said, "Hey, Brooke, I'm playing this weekend with the band. Do you want to come and sing with us?" And I was five. And so, of course, I was so excited. I had on my head-to-toe cowgirl western sequin. I had chaps. I had a cowgirl hat on, rhinestone, head to toe in this little teeny tiny smoking aloud 1995 honky tonk. And
little Brooke was ready.
She was little Brooke was learning how to line dance at five. So, yeah, it was a really interesting way to kind of pop into singing, into music. And it would just felt very, very natural. It was just kind of oh, yeah, this is what I want to do. This is what my dad does. You know, it just felt this is so much fun. And I remember getting up on stage, and my first song that I ever sang at the honky tonk was "Any Man of Mine" by Shania Twain. And which is hilarious, a five-year-old singing that song.
And then the sass and the everything.
Oh, you know about the sass. Oh, you already know. So, yeah, I remember when I sang that song, the crowd was singing and dancing. And then when I would sing a slower, more sad song, or just a slower romantic song, how that would change the mood of the audience. Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking, wow, this is so cool that you can affect people like this. And so I think that, growing up, I was I had a lot of opportunities to play because my dad was, you know, the local band. So I remember when I was 12, Alan Jackson was coming through town at our like amphitheater, and they called my dad's band, and my dad's band was already booked. And they were like, well, do you know of any other acts that would want to do this? And my dad was like, well, my daughter, I mean, I don't know, she's 12, but give her a call, you know? And so they actually did. And that was my first paying gig where I got to open up for Alan Jackson.
That's a crazy first big, huge,
no big deal. First paying gig.
It's really wild. Yeah. But it was cool because kind of from there on, my city, I'm from West Palm Beach, Florida, which is funny because I feel like a lot of people are like, West Palm Beach, Florida, like, isn't that not country? I wish that everyone could go to one country concert in my hometown or one honky-tonk in my hometown because it is, like, people eat, breathe, and sleep country music where I'm from.
It makes total sense. I'm from Northern California, and I have seen more unironic cowboy boots where I'm from than I've ever seen in downtown Nashville. Like, genuinely, it is the country. It might be, like, vineyards and orchards instead of cornfields, but it is so country. And I, like, don't know how to describe to people. So that makes complete sense that where you're from is, like, very much South-esque. Yeah.
I love that you get that because people are like, wait a second, where did they play in West Palm Beach? And I'm like, there's an... like, there's such a high demand for country music down there. It's wild. And so, anyways, West Palm Beach, like, my town, really kind of from that point on took me under their wing as, like, the country singer in our hometown. So whenever a country artist would come through, they would, I would kind of be, like, one of their first calls.
We don't always hear a lot about that, I think, in the last recent years of having that kind of grassroots come up, especially with social media and TikTok. Things are really changing. So
You're telling me.
Yeah, it's so weird to think that you and your other peers are almost kind of one of the last generations to possibly have that be their kind of come up story, at least have in having it be, like, one of the more common as opposed to getting noticed online.
Yeah, like, your community was an actual physical community.
Yeah, or, right?
Yeah, it's like now the community is out there online, yeah.
Totally. That's so true. That's so true. Mm. But, yeah, I mean, kind of from there, I opened up for Brooks and Dunn and Sugarland. I sang with them when they came through. And all of a sudden, it was kind of like, this is what I want to do, and I wanted to move to Nashville so bad, but my family didn't have the means, and honestly, like, it wouldn't have been the right time anyways. It was, like, back when no females were getting played. It was, like, Taylor Swift, Carrie, and Miranda. And so it was like, okay, go to college, and as soon as you're done with college, you move to Nashville. And that's pretty much what I did. I graduated from University of Florida, and I ended up moving back home.
What did you study?
I studied business and marketing with a minor in mass communications and a concentration in theater.
Awesome.
Oh, fantastic. All really relevant to what you were trying to do.
Yeah, it ended up, I mean, having the knowledge of, like, contracts and what those mean for, like, such an extended amount of time, I think really saved me from signing bad contracts. But yeah, after I graduated, I moved back to my hometown for, like, 9 months, and I was just saving up money to move to Nashville, and I started bartending at my local line dancing bar, and I was like, that's a quick way to get money, you know? And then one day we had I was bartending outside, and we had a guitar player and singer that was playing outside, and he went on break, and I jumped up and I was like, hey, would you mind if I, like, played? And he was like, you sing? And I'm like, this is so weird. Like, this is all that I used to do. But people don't even know this about me anymore because I went to college, you know? So I was like, yeah. And my boss came outside and he was like, what are you doing? And I was like, everyone has a drink. Like, sorry, I just... He's like, no, what are you doing bartending? Like, this is... You need to be singing.
Great boss.
I wasn't a great bartender. I mean, I knew how to do the drinks, but I was more interested in, like, having conversations with people than I was really bartending. I mean, I felt more like a therapist than a bartender. But yeah, then I started playing shows, and I started with 1 4-hour show one night a week, and within 2 weeks I had 5 4-hour shows a week. Wow. Oh. And it was just me and like my guitar, and I had some little karaoke tracks that I would play with, and I started building, you know, a fan base in my hometown, and I was making, you know, I was making money to be able to support myself and move to Nashville. And after about 9 months, I was like, okay, I can do this now. I have enough money where I feel secure and I feel like I can do this. So I moved to Nashville, and I was like, okay, how do I sustain this, you know? And I decided to spend 2 weeks here in Nashville writing and networking and like meeting people and figuring out the city. Mm-hmm. And then I would fly home to Florida for 2 weeks, and I would play shows down there. And that's how I ended up being able to support myself and like not getting a 9-to-5 job or bartending again.
That's awesome.
So yeah, I did that.
I've heard people say that if you spend enough time in Nashville that people don't know that you don't live there, then
yes.
Nobody knows any different.
Yeah. Well, I was talking to somebody who lives in LA 3 weeks out of the month and Nashville 1 week out of the month. And she said, you know, you really only see people about like once a month. So most people think I live here. And I was like, I fully thought you lived here.
Yeah.
So that totally makes sense.
That is kind of a dream that, like, so many artists can't support themselves by just doing music full time. So even to have that built-in fan base that allows you to travel and you kind of have simultaneously the opportunity to build yourself up here and keep that fan base at home that a lot of people lose when they move because they're not, like you said, you went to college and then no one knew that about you. It's kind of a little bit of a dream to have your... It's like a feather in your cap for any meeting you go into. You already have that fan base and that experience.
And what you were doing there was such a proving ground for your career as a singer, as a songwriter. I mean, 4-hour blocks of show are nothing to turn your nose up at. That is some serious like entertaining that you have to do in 4-hour shows. And doing five of those a week, that is a very intense. I mean, that's like Olympic training for an athlete, but you're doing it for your voice and your persona on stage.
Totally. And what was really interesting about that was, you know, I came from college. I didn't sing in college a lot. Like, I didn't sing at local bars in college or anything like that. I was like, I want to graduate, and I want to graduate fast, and I want to get to Nashville, you know? And so I was just like, let's get school done. And when I got back, I was like, you know, I went from singing one night a week to 5 nights a week for 4 hours so quickly. And I really felt like, oh my gosh, I am like a bodybuilder for a diaphragm. Like, your voice is a muscle. And I quickly, you know, went into, you're right, like some kind of Olympic training that I did to myself. And I think that that really helped me, you know, figure out my voice as far as like who I was as a singer. And so, yeah, I feel like that was a really pivotal time for me. But I moved to Nashville. I was going back and forth, and I ended up getting a record deal only 2 years into moving there, which I felt was
That's super huge, early.
Mm-hmm. I didn't feel ready to get a record deal when I got a record deal. I felt like, I felt like, oh my gosh, I'm just getting my feet on the ground. Like, I'm just, you know, learning how to write a song the way that I would want to write a song and figuring out what my voice as a songwriter was. And so that was a really interesting part of my career when I got signed.
And that's kind of the opposite of how a lot of people feel. People feel like they, when they finally get that record deal, often it's like, oh my gosh, finally. So for you to say the opposite, I think is probably going to be really relieving to people who maybe don't feel ready to fully achieve their dreams. How did that all play out for you, learning to write songs and having a team where a lot of people kind of like feel really solid in that before they have a team around them? And then that going from your early career to now the Outlaw Love EP, like how was that journey for you?
It was a really confusing journey for me because I think that at the time there was so much that I didn't know about myself. I think I was 25 when I got signed, and there was just so much that I was still figuring out about myself. And at the time I was such a people pleaser, And, you know, I got signed to the same record and label that Jason Aldean was at. And at the time, the leadership there was basically one man. And he was like, we want you to be the female Jason Aldean. And I was like, this doesn't really seem like what I'm doing. I mean, the first song that I put out was a song called American Dreamin'. And it was the exact opposite of a Jason Aldean female Jason Aldean song. Mm-hmm. So it was really, really interesting. Sorry, there's a cat that's sitting outside my windowsill and just staring into my soul right now.
He's interested in your story. He's like, so. I'm yours now. And also, I want to hear about your life.
Yeah. Yeah, he's like, you feed me sometimes, but I didn't know that, like...
Yeah, I didn't know all this about you.
Yeah, exactly.
He's really, I really like you as a person. But that's a lot to put on somebody's shoulders, to already have a complete idea of who you're expecting them to be and trying to mold them into. As they're still developing themselves.
I always love it when they're saying, I want you to be another X.
Yes.
You know, it's like, another Y. It's like, can we try doing something new? Yeah.
Can we try doing something that someone's not already doing?
Yeah. Like everyone came out with a Lady Gaga-esque album after Lady Gaga hit big. I always think of that. Like, everyone said no to her, and then she got really big, and then all of a sudden everyone was like, let's do something edgy and wear meat dresses and just like go crazy with the auto tune. And I'm like, I don't think that's the reason it hit, guys. I think that was just her.
But it's so easy to get lost in that, when especially like you mentioned, you're a people pleaser, you want to keep the people around you happy, plus you're in a position where you're given a record deal, which those are not easy to come by.
Yeah. And especially I'm in sure 2014.
That, yeah. And I'm as a woman. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm sure that you look around you at the people that are involved and you think, well, they must know something more than I do. I mean, they're in charge. They must know what they're doing. I should listen to them.
It's exactly
so
that.
It's really easy to get lost in other people's opinions of who you should be.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I mean, I think that was the biggest thing for me is like, I was like, well, I'm new here. So you probably know more than I do. And I think so much of that was just like not knowing how to listen to my own intuition and my own gut yet. Mm-hmm. And also, you know, just growing up kind of in a society where, you know, people pleasing was showing that you were like a good person, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I was just trying to do what they wanted me to do, and I feel like I lost my voice at that point, because I was always in this compromise of trying to write a song that I really loved that also was the female based Jason Aldean, and I was like, these are not intersecting for me. Luckily, a few years into me having my record deal, the owner of the company sold the company to BMG, and BMG immediately came in. This was also at the time that I met my girlfriend, who is now my wife, and realized so much about myself. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh my gosh, like, no wonder I wasn't finding my voice. I didn't even know who I was.
Yeah.
Tell us for a second about what that was like for you when you met, and what your emotions were around that, because this was at a time when there were like no out gay country singing women, very few men. I mean,
Well, I at first was like, this is gonna be great. Like, you know, I met the love of my life. She's amazing. She worked at my record label, so that was scandalous in and of itself. And so it was this weird thing where, you know, I was so excited and in love for the first time in my life, and knowing so much about myself, and it was like this blissful time, just like, you know, falling in love with my forever. Mm-hmm. And then I was told that we were not allowed to be in a relationship if I wanted to keep my record deal. Oh. And that was devastation. I mean, I think that what's so interesting about my story is, like, you know, as I've told y'all, I started singing when I was 4 years old. I was on stage at 5. This is all I've ever known. And also because I didn't know myself, you know, I was dating boys and After dating a few boys, I was like, I don't really ever see myself getting married. Yeah. You know, like, I never saw myself, like, falling in love and having this fairy tale love story that, you know, took over my heart and consumed so much of my life. Yeah. I just was like, I just want to be a singer and that's it. And then all of a sudden, I had this incredible, like, you know, fairy tale story, love story that I am not even allowed to speak about, that all of a sudden, for me, I'm like, well, how am I even supposed to be an artist and, like, write songs? I'm supposed to be writing my truth and telling my truth, and I can't do that if I'm not allowed to speak about it.
It's an impossible choice.
It is.
It is impossible, and you can't be a yeah. good songwriter without authenticity. There's no way.
No.
It's not sustainable.
And that kind of awakening is kind of from the creative standpoint, is every team's dream when artists have these big awakenings about who they are and what they want mm-hmm. and what their voice is and where they're going. It's like the master push of all creative firestorms. Like, it just comes pouring out. So to then also be like, oh, by the way, you can't have this is
yeah.
such, pardon my language, but like such a mind fuck as an artist and as a professional.
Mm-hmm. It really, really was.
How did that go for you, like, navigating that?
Well, I was a complete mess for like 4 years. I'm an open book, right? And so I just want to, like, tell it to the world. And then all of a sudden it was like, you better hush, otherwise your dreams of being a country artist that you've worked your entire freaking life for are going to be kaput. And so it was really hard. I mean, luckily I had my wife, because she was my rock through the whole thing and always, you know, had my back and stood by me and was right there along the way with me. And so it wasn't only the industry, it was also like my family had a really hard time with it and just pushed back a lot. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, really, I think that it bonded my wife and I so much, because we were the only thing that each other had, really, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
And at the same time, here I am, you know, getting to play all these venues I always wanted to play, all these festivals with my, you know, like the icons of country music. And I am just like depressed and a robot, you know. Mm-hmm. I all of a sudden had to, like, you know, turn on this like girl who, you know, was talking about, I had love songs at the time, mm-hmm. and I had to change my pronouns, not my pronouns, but the pronouns mm-hmm. of the person I was talking about in the song, to fit what society wanted mm-hmm. me to say and what country radio wanted me to say. And that was terrifying, because God forbid I, like, you know, get, you know, just speak what's on my mind and say she instead of he, and then all of a sudden it's just gone in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
So that was really the hardest mm-hmm. part for me, was keeping it quiet, and, you know, that's really, really hard on a person. And I ended up getting really, really sick, mm-hmm. and it took them years to find out that I actually had ulcers from the stress wow. that my body was going through and bottling up so much of my life and just trying to be this person that I wasn't. And so at that point, my doctor was like, listen, there's no magic pill for this. There's no medicine that we can put you on. You have to heal your body by not stressing out
yeah.
and by living your life authentically. And, like, sitting there having this conversation, not with a therapist, but literally with, like, my GI doctor, yeah. I was like, oh, God, okay. That was, like, a light bulb moment for me, where I was like, I have to get right with myself, and I can't keep on pushing this to the side and putting this off and thinking that everything will work out if I just keep on lying to the world.
That mm-hmm. is so interesting that you said that, because my next question was going to be, from a personal standpoint, it sounds absolutely exhausting and draining. Like, the amount of mental and emotional effort that you have to put into, like you said, not ever letting a she instead of a he slip and doing all of these interviews. And you're waking up at 3, 4 a.m. to go do these things, and you're doing meet and greets, and you are not sleeping, and you're over-caffeinated and all of these things. Like, I don't think people truly understand how much stress, and also from a health perspective, all that caffeine and late nights and probably alcohol throughout the day, different things and all that stuff is insane. So to have a physical manifestation, it's both a horrible thing, but also in any way, did it feel a little bit almost validating? Like, you have this physical thing that you're like, it's not in my head. It's not just what someone else is telling me I can and can't do. It is literally a physical thing that I have to be myself and I have to be public about it.
Talk about a come to Jesus moment of you can't say no to that.
I mean, Jesus knocked real hard on my door.
Yeah.
He was like, girl, you need to get right with yourself. That was absolutely, it was validating in a way. And it was like, wow, your mental health becomes your physical health.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And to continue in this way would be physically killing myself. I mean, I could have died if I didn't take care of myself. I mean, my body was literally bleeding out. And so it was terrible. I ended up having to get off of tour. I wasn't allowed to tour anymore. And I just had to heal my body. And so, you know, as an artist who's used to being on the road and used to touring, and then having to like stop all of that and get introspective, is terrifying, especially when you have something that you have to face and then, you know, tell the world. It was terrifying, but it was also obviously the most healing thing to have to go through. And I feel like I learned myself so quickly because I had no other option.
At what point did that support change for you professionally? Because now you went from all of that to being able to be public about things. You have a 4-song EP all about it, about finding love, and called Outlaw Love, which is such a perfect title.
It's a beautiful project.
Yeah, it really gorgeous. Yeah. Even your wedding video is one of the music videos, and you have Trisha Yearwood officiating, and you have all of this support publicly, personally, creatively, and on the business side. At what point did that all change and start to go in the right direction for you?
Well, during the time that I had to, you know, stop touring, we got bought out, my record label got bought out by BMG, and a whole slew of new leadership came in. And BMG is just like, I mean, I feel like no artists are like, I love my record label, and I love my record label. I mean, I just got back from playing at the Germany branch of BMG and the London branch of BMG, and they really came in, and I think it was like this hush-hush thing, like, hey guys, you know, we have a LGBTQ artist over here. And BMG was like, what? This is amazing. And all of a sudden,
we can work with that.
We can do this. This is so cool. In country? Oh my God, that's awesome.
Talk about a dream reaction. Yeah.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden, I have this meeting with the leadership at my record label, and they're like, hey, you know, we just want to let you know that not only are we supportive of you, we encourage you to be yourself, and we want you to write music that feels like you, and you don't have to worry about pronouns anymore. Speak your mind and sing what you want to sing about, and, you know, we think it's really important to have inclusion of all types of people and all kinds of love. And by the way, we have, like, you know, seen you and Hillary together, and you guys are a beautiful couple, and, you know, wouldn't that be amazing? And I'm like, oh my gosh, this is insane. And so, you know, I went from this, like, you cannot tell anyone, to, like, they literally said, like, you could put Hillary in a music video. And I was like, whoa, 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 whoa. Let's not get crazy. They're not going to play a a music video of two girls falling in love on CMT. Fast forward 2 years later, and they play videos of me and my wife falling in love on CMT. So, yeah, it's just, it's been the craziest journey. I think that it's hard to even, like, really talk about, not just because so much happened.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard to even kind of verbalize just all of the different things that had to fall into place for me to be able to be myself.
Yeah.
But I was reading Untamed by Glennon Doyle during COVID.
Love that book. Yes.
It changed my life. And I remember reading a paragraph about integrity. Mm. And she just blatantly, you know, defined integrity as being the person that you are in your home to the world. Mm. And I was like, wow, I am living my life with no integrity. Who is this helping? It's not helping me. It's not helping my community. It's not helping other people who feel like me and love like me.
Yeah.
What am I doing this for? Who am I protecting? And it was literally like in that moment, I was like, hey, babe, I need to come out. And she was like, oh, praise the Lord.
I was like, finally.
Yes, for real.
So when was that moment when you came out to your fan base? And what did it feel like?
It felt like the most freeing thing because I came out in like winter of 2021.
Mm-hmm.
And we had just come from this horrible pandemic where no one was seeing each other. But also there was this awakening, I feel, of people where mm-hmm. they started to realize what was important mm-hmm. and trying to be more transparent about who they really are. And all of a sudden there was this like yearn for authenticity that before it was kind of like just be the perfect person and everyone will yes. love you, and now it was like be who you are and it will heal other people and relate to other people's brokenness as well.
Yeah,
and
that's so true. That was on happening on so many different levels during mm-hmm. that time. I never really thought about that, but yeah, it was like let your grays grow out and
yeah.
don't wear makeup and speak to people from, you know, through the screen or whatever, yeah. from in whatever way you can, authentically. Yeah.
Totally.
And people had time to think, time to
yeah.
not be yeah. go, go, go. I know for me that was a lot of awakenings personally, professionally, artistically, were just like, I have never had this much time to think and to gather mm-hmm. knowledge and to not be beholden to having to be somewhere at a certain time. And that's such a beautiful thing. So you were able to come out in 2021, and what was yeah. the response like for you personally and professionally?
I was really nervous because I was just like, you know, the last time someone did this was Ty Herndon and mm-hmm. Shelley Wright, and they weren't welcomed.
They were both
and
pretty much blacklisted. Yeah.
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 And I was like, but I was at this point where I was like, if that happens to me, then this is not where I belong.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Period. And so I was like, one way or the other, I get to be free. I get to be myself. I get to live my life finally. So I think that for me, it was a win-win. Because I then, once I came out, I either knew I belong here or I don't.
Mm-hmm.
And I can move forward with my life. And so I came out and I mean, the response was incredible. So many people started messaging me and my wife and just saying like, oh my gosh, I heard your story and it sounds so much like mine and I didn't think that there was a place for me in country music and you're showing me that there is. And it was just like the most rewarding thing to, not only for me and my experience, but to hear the experience of other people and to make them feel a belonging in country music and kind of just in life as well.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. And also, you know, within country music, like within the industry, it was also the same kind of open arms.
People always love to underestimate the power of seeing someone's favorite artist or actor, or, you know, whatever it
yeah.
is, being human and speaking their truth, but then when it's inconvenient, they love to be like, oh, just do your art or whatever, and then they flip around and they say, art is, what is it, like the reflection of times. It tells you exactly what's going on. You know, you have 60s, 70s, 80s, and all of the art reflects exactly what's going on and the public feelings about that. And so it's no small feat for you to just simply live your life publicly. I love that. And then you got recognized. I mean, you were the, GLAAD 2023 Awards nominee for Outstanding Breakthrough Artist.
Yeah.
And you've had all of these accolades since Being Honest. It, like, opened the floodgates.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What is your experience now, like, sitting in the aftermath? You've done the hard part of coming out. You have a supportive team. You have a wife who's, I believe, also your tour manager, so you guys get to work together that way. What is that like for you, like, sitting in that now and being able to plan the next steps with a little more certainty?
That's a really good question. Yeah, I feel like it's almost like it feels normal now, you know? And to be at industry parties and, like, walk in hand with my wife and being like, if the girls in 2015 could only see us now, you know? And then for me as an artist, just to be able to, like, walk into a writing room and be able to tell my real story and not be afraid that someone's going to have some weird reaction. Like, everybody knows they're not going to take a right with me if they're homophobic. Cool. Sounds good. Let's do this thing, you know?
Love that. Yeah.
So I'm just able to walk into every room with so much more confidence. And I think that as an artist and as a human, to just be able to, like, live in my truth and stand in my truth and be able to write music and put out music that just feels so important to me and to my community and to truth seekers, I think.
Yeah.
It's been an incredible place to be. And I think that I'm still realizing that I landed on my 2 feet, you know?
It takes a long time after so long in the other reality.
I had to unlearn so many things.
Yeah.
And I think that you're just such a likable, kind, warm person and just a real person. And
that's sweet. Thank you.
So, you know, what you're doing is important on far more levels than just your own. Obviously, you know that. You understand the connection that you have with your fans and the ripple effect that this has had all through the music business and the country music business especially, which was like a behemoth trying to move the needle on how people look at anything that is outside their comfort zone in country. Yeah. But I think you make something that seemed other to people feel familiar and comfortable. And so that's where you can just cause so much change, you know? It's like, well, I know Brooke and she's amazing and she's lovely and I see her love story and it's a real love story. And so when you get to see that for yourself, then it's like, well, maybe I need to start thinking a little bit differently about some of these things that I had assumptions about.
Yeah, you know? I mean, seeing is believing, you know? Yeah. And I think that that's not only true for people who maybe I've never seen a queer couple before, that, you know, we're, like, really in love and, like, really doing life together and realizing, wait, that looks a lot like my relationship, you know? Mm-hmm. But I think that it's also younger people who are growing up who, like me, didn't have people to look up to in the LGBTQ community. You know, we had Ellen and Rosie O'Donnell, and mm-hmm. I remember thinking, well, like, I don't want to cut my hair and, like, I guess I must not be gay because, like, I don't present that way, you know? Mm-hmm. And then I think that it's really important to see for young people to see successful relationships and to see successful queer people doing what they love and being supported and loved for it. So that's a really important reason as to why I felt like it was necessary for me to not just be out to my, you know, small circle and just write ambiguously about my life, but to be as open and as honest as I have been about my story, because I want to be what I didn't have when I was growing up.
Yeah, and with Ellen and Rosie, they were both comedians. It was so contingent. Their acceptance was almost contingent on them being not the main love interest, not the main character, even if they were. It was so, I don't want to say like a clown of it, but it was really like they were delegitimized as like whole people in certain areas because they were just...
funny girls.
Yeah, the funny entertainer.
I think like comp het is such a thing that's like a theme throughout your story, like compulsory heterosexuality, which is like if when you're just raised where everything in media and in your life, everything that is given like quote unquote airtime is just heterosexual and that's all you've ever seen, it can be so hard for queer people to find, like you said, I don't see myself in that, so I must not be gay. And that is such a real thing for so many people. It makes me wonder if looking back on your own story, it sounds like you did a lot of that deconstructing, like in private, maybe forced to be in private, but still in private before you were able to come out. Do you wish that you would have been able to have that that journey of learning more publicly?
Whoa, I guess I've never really thought about that. But yeah, I think I do wish that it could have been more, I don't know if I would say publicly, but just not so hidden.
Yeah.
You know?
That makes
like
total sense.
Share what I would want to share and not share what I felt was too much, you know? Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I think about, what do they call it? Like grooming?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And there's so much, you know, there are a lot of people in politics right now that are talking about queers grooming people to be queer. Yeah. And I am like, if people were able to be groomed straight or gay, I would have been the straightest human on the planet. I mean,
Good point.
Yeah. I mean, I was in pageants as a kid. I was homecoming queen. I was a sorority girl. My parents, like, let me date any guy I wanted to. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it was just this very hyper heterosexual society that I was in. And goodness gracious, like, if that was what made people gay or straight, I would just be so straight as an arrow.
Yeah.
And that's just not how it works. So I think that it's really important to, like, even speak on that, just because it's like, I've been on the other side of that, and it's like, goodness, how much my life and mental health would have changed if I would have had even one example of, you know, a queer person on TV who had, you know, a successful, happy, healthy life.
Yeah.
I think that I would have figured out who I was so much sooner and not had so much shame and so much unlearning to do after the fact.
That makes complete sense. And it's just having the autonomy to choose for yourself what you would have wanted to share or not share. And I think that that was such a perfect point to bring up and to end on. Because, yeah, so many people, I wish I would have saved the video, but I studied, in the way that you studied communications and all that stuff, I studied gender communications and I focused in romantic relationships and social justice. So my TikTok feed is like, but this woman, she was commenting on someone saying like, oh, wow, everybody's gay now. Like there were never this many gay people when I was a kid, you know, that kind of thing. And she was like, actually, you see the same thing with this as you do in a lot of other areas where people say stuff like that. She was like, it's just that there's more representation, so people learn about themselves more. There's more acceptance, so people come out more and don't have to live these closeted lives. But she was like, really what we see is you have that burst of people knowing who they are and coming out and living proudly, and then it hits a plateau, and we see those numbers really steadily stay at that plateau. They're not, just to your point, I'm like, if you could groom or convince someone to be, that number would go up and up and up and up.
It's not like you're converting everybody over.
But she's like, no, you hit that plateau and the numbers don't lie. They stay there, just like with any other thing. It's just representation and acceptance, and then people are who they are just publicly, and you see those numbers reflected. So I love that you brought that point up, and it's such a great place to end before we get to our rapid fire.
Okay, rapid fire questions. Who would be your dream collaborator if there was a guarantee that they would say yes?
Lady Gaga.
Love it.
Oh, that would be amazing. I could totally see that.
I just think that she can sing anything and she can do anything. And I just think that she would sound so sick on a country song. And I would just be so honored to get to bring her into country music.
I think so many people would be down for that.
Okay, we'll make that happen. Universe, make that happen.
We'll put it out. We'll tag her when the promo comes out. Perfect. All right. What advice would you give your younger self?
Well, there's so many things that my younger self just had to figure out. I would probably say your life isn't going to be at all what you expected it to be, but it will be 10 times better.
I love that.
Love that too. If you could ask God or the universe or however you want to put it one question, what would you ask?
God, this is like super morbid, but why do you let babies and like innocents die? I think that's a big question for me.
I think we've all wondered that at some point. What is your favorite thing about yourself?
My favorite thing about myself is probably my bravery.
Yes. I think a lot of your fans and people would say that too.
I don't think I could have said that about myself even 4 years ago, so I think it's something that I grew into and something that I will always stand on now that I have it and know what that feels like.
Yeah. What's one thing that you think is totally over or underrated?
I do feel like this is very controversial, and I can lose some fans from this. I don't get the hype of Harry Potter.
Okay. That's okay.
I'm like a witchy woman. Like my favorite movie is The Wizard of Oz. Like I've always loved like Bewitched and like all the like witchy Hocus Pocus and like all the witchy movies.
Did you ever see the movie The Worst Witch? That's from like the 1980s. No. So this is like from the 1980s. Like Firouza Balk is the main character in it, and like Tim Curry makes a little appearance, and it's like the cheesiest movie from the 1980s. Terrible like visual effects and stuff, but it is literally Harry Potter. Just it's a girl, and it's her story of going to this. She's in a Hogwarts witch school, and they're learning to fly brooms, and it's like it's so similar. I was like, that is so weird, because did Harry Potter come from that?
Wow. Crazy.
So go back and watch it, The Worst Witch. I think they made a series out of it on Netflix, but you have to go back and watch the original movie, and it's just like kind of weirdly on point for...
Wow. Yeah. It's like J.K. Rowling had a little viewing of...
Maybe. Could be.
This movie.
Yeah.
I couldn't get into the books, but I loved the movies growing up, and I still like rewatch them around Christmas, like one or two of them, whatever. So I don't think people will fault you too much. Unless you're a massive Harry Potter fan, then we're so sorry. But also, she was being brave. She was living her
truth.
That's
right.
So.
I was. Being authentic. Exactly.
Well, we love you, Brooke. You're amazing. And thank you so much for sharing your story. And I've just been such a fan over the years working with you and seeing you thrive and find yourself and find your voice. It's just been really tremendous to see. You've caused seismic changes through the whole industry with what you're doing, so keep doing it, and I'm just proud to be your friend.
Oh, that's so sweet. Thank you so much, love. I feel the same way about you, and I'm just so happy to know you and get to write with you, and you're awesome. So thank you guys so much for having me, and thank you for this podcast. It's awesome.
To stay up to date on all things The Table on social media, join us on Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter at the handle @TheTableWomen.
Our theme song, Stop You, is written and performed by yours truly, Sarah DeForest, co-written by Taylor Foley and Will Macbeth, and produced by Will Macbeth.
And as always, we'll include links to any creatives, music, television, etc., referenced in this episode in the episode notes.
We'll see you next time on
The Table.
Do what you want, work what you got, say what you think, and don't let them stop you. Stop you, don't let them stop.